First of all, I want to thank Ezer, Leilodim, for inviting me. And all the advertisements said that introduced me to Borough Park, but really my mother and my wife have done that many years before. And I've spent many hours waiting outside of wonderful shops and stores for them. And I want to thank you for giving me a chance also. Ms. Vitriol, who took care of all the arrangements as far as I was concerned, in such a wonderful and delicate way. And I had an opportunity, at least for my Shalom Bayis, it was certainly good. My wife and I were able to spend a little quiet time in the car together. I want to begin with the two tiny little stories that will set the tone for all that we're going to talk about now. There was a great tzaddik, the Rebbe Rashab of Shalom Ber from Lubavitch. The Rashab was a very deep thinker, and his mamorim, his discourses, would continue for 6, 7, 8 hours. And one time when the Rebbe Rashab was lost deep in thought, preparing for a mimer, his Rebbetzin sent the Shamas, whatever his name was, Yankele, the Rebbetzin sent the Shamas to bring soup to the Rebbe, with the strict instructions that the soup should be served to the Rebbe immediately. He needed it, and he should have a good hot bowl of soup. So the problem was that the Shamas brought the Rebbe the soup, but the Rebbe's mind was in the Olam someplace out there. So he was sitting for a long time with the spoon, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, mixing the soup. And his thoughts were far away. And the Shamas, he knew he had one job, and he was going to get in trouble with the Rebbetzin if he didn't accomplish it. So finally, he was looking at this, and he screamed out, Rebbe, the lakshin's at the bottom. If you're looking for the lakshin, Rebbe, you have to dig into the bottom. So the Rebbe looked up, and he smiled, and he says, Yankele Nichamtoni, you really have comforted me. Because what the Rebbe was thinking was that if you really, really want to get to the good stuff, the lakshin, you have to dig deep. The lakshin's not at the top. You know, the good stuff, you have to know how to dig deep. Therefore, it should be understood, and I mentioned this to those who arranged for the talk. I'm not coming here to tell you different eitzes. Smile when you open the door. He has to bring flowers, v'chulu v'chulu. You've heard these things for years, and there are, Baruch Hashem, many, many books. And it's important. I'm not in any way minimizing the importance of that. It certainly is important. But what I want to do is really to get to the bottom of the matter. To find the lakshin. To dig deep. And therefore, it's going to require a great deal of kaychas and nefesh, effort. You know, the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, rarely left. The Vilna Gaon rarely left his Bes Medrash. But it was known that there was one mitzvah which the Gaon would leave and would spare no effort. And that was to marry Yesoimim, to marry orphans. He made Shidduchim, and he would always officiate, he would be Masada Kedushin at those weddings. There was one such chasna that took place that the Goyin arranged. The girl, the Kala, was a beautiful, wonderful girl. The chasna was a fine young man, but unfortunately he wasn't able to see. He was totally blind. And the entire town was in an uproar. How could the Vilna Gaon marry off such a Kala, such a beautiful girl, a wonderful girl, to Nabuch, a fellow who couldn't see? But the girl insisted. She trusted the Vilna Gaon, and she went through with it, and they came to the chuppah in front of the whole Vilna, because the Gaon insisted that everybody come to such a chasana. Two orphans were getting married. So they came to the chasana, and they're standing under the chuppah, and the girl, the Vilna Gaon, is standing with a cup just about to make the bracha, and he turns to the chasna and he says in a way that everybody could hear. He says, you know, the Gemara says, and it's a psak in Shulchan Aruch, Osel Kadesh is a Isha Ad Shirena. You're not allowed to marry someone if you haven't seen her. So the people start to cry. What kind of a thing is that to say now? But he can't see. And he himself is crying. And the Gemara said, did you hear? I told you. You cannot get married unless you've met, unless you've seen. Your Kala. And at that moment, for the first time in his life, he opened his eyes and he was able to see. This happened in front of the whole Vilna. That's what we need to do. That's the aside, the essence of Shalom Bayis. That each one should see how beautiful and how special the other one is. We don't have a Vilna Gaon to wrench our eyes open. So we're on our own, with Rabbi Shalom's help, to open our eyes to see the beauty of each one. We have a Kabbalah from the Avnei Nezer, Schus Yageni Leinu, that he heard from his father-in-law, the Kotzker. The Gemara says in the first parak in Brachos, Kosher tarbus robus ech beisah shel adam yoisem im melchemes goig umagoig. In simple English, if there's a home that is broken, if there's a home of sadness, either the children, God forbid, are going away, or there's chalila, there's a shattered relationship between the husband and wife. So the Gemara says that kosher tabas rabbis are based on shalom yosem mechamas goy gemagog. It means that when there's a home that's unhappy, that is more difficult, more bitter, more unbearable than those horrible wars that are predicted to be at the end of time, the wars of goy gemagog. And the Avnei Nezer said back then in the 19th century that he has a Kabbalah that in those last days before Mashiach comes, now, in those last days before Mashiach comes, there's going to be such unhappiness in Jewish homes, there's going to be such a shviras akelim, a shattering of vessels, that he heard from his shver, from the Kotzker, that we no longer will have to go through the wars of Gog Magog, because the wars that are taking place, that will take place in those last days before Mashiach, in the Jewish home itself, between parents and children, husbands and wives, will be so bitter that will be exempt from the wars of Gog and Magog. When people get married, they're seeking not only happiness. Happiness is a very hard thing to define. They're seeking redemption. Redemption means there are two people who meet under the chuppah, nowadays maybe a little bit before, and they're hoping to find each other and to redeem each other from the loneliness of this world. And each one is seeking that friendship, that intimacy. There's so many people that live in their homes homesick. They live in their homes in a state of bitter loneliness because they thought they would find redemption. And instead of finding redemption, they found only disappointment and discouragement, and ultimately despair. So we have to understand, and that's what I'm going to try to get to now. Obviously, this requires hours and hours, years. But to try to touch upon a little bit the shayrish, the root of the problem, of this disappointment. And once we understand, how is it possible after so many years, people share so many experiences, raising children, people who share so much, nevertheless, it's possible for them to be so far apart from each other. When we understand the underlying cause for this loneliness and these difficulties, we can begin the repair. When did the problem begin? This isn't an easy inyan. When did the problem begin? There's a name for Rosh Hashanah, another name that we find in Chazal for Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is also called the Yom HaNesira. The Nesira means the sawing in half. Because I'm sure that all of you know that we have a teaching from Chazal. It's in many places in Chazal. In the name of Reb Shmuel Ben Achmeni and others who taught Du Partzufen Baro, that originally Adam and Chava were created in a state of absolute oneness, Gaba Mikan veGaba Mikan. Originally, Adam and Chava came into the world, according to this teaching of Chazal, attached back to back. Du Partzufen. one being with two parts. And the Nesira, the sawing in half, was that separation that took place on the first Rosh Hashanah, on the day of the creation of Adam and Chava, where Hashem separated them. And this is hinted at in the Pasuk in Tillim, Ochor v'kedem tzartani, that Hashem formed me front and back. Hashem formed me front and back. That means that originally Adam and Chava, the first Chosan and Kala, came into the world completely attached to one another. And not only that, in the Zohar Kodesh it says that this is something that only materialized in the physical world, but really, Behemoth, in the spiritual world, in that world before the descent into this world. In the spiritual world, those two neshamas really, really were half neshamas that formed one whole unit. There was the half neshama, the plag gufa, that piece that's called the zachah, the male. And there's the piece that's called the female, the nekeva, the kala. And throughout all of their lives, they have to seek each other. So the question is, it seems like it was such a convenient thing. Could you imagine? Wouldn't you like that everywhere you go? It's a little inconvenient maybe getting with the car, out of a car. But as far as the convenience of having a husband and wife together all the time, certainly one of them will have the car keys. One of them does have the credit card. One of them is carrying all the phone numbers. So the Rebbeinu Shlomo made them in such a way. And it sounds like it's a wonderful arrangement. So the question is, if things were absolutely clear in that way, where there's complete and total oneness, where they were attached, then why did the Rebbeinu Shlomo bring about this terrible detachment that's called the Nesira, the sawing in half? Because ever since the sawing in half, every one of us has to make an unbelievable effort, kaidem kol, to find the shidduch, that we should have the right shidduch. What the Gemara describes is that the person is mechazer achrei v'dosel, the man is looking for that which was lost to him. That which was lost. There was a Rosh Hashiva, my wife told me that she saw that there was a Rosh Hashiva that asked one of the bochum what's taking him so long to get married, to find the shidduch, says Rebbe. It says in the Gemara that a chosten is mechazer achar avidah, so he's looking for his lost object. It's taking me a long time to find my aveda. So the Rashiva told him, he says, listen, Yingle, the problem is not you're looking for an aveda, your problem is you're looking for a mitziah. It's looking for a mitziah, it's not so pashit. But the truth is that because Hashem brought about this separation, this sawing in half, each one of us has to go through unbelievable pain. Kaidim that there should be a zivig to find the other, Aleph. And Beis, once you're already married, in the relationship as well. There is that state of separation. There is that state of Nesira that persists. So why did the Rebbeinu Shlom do this? Listen carefully. Why did the Master of the Universe do such a thing? It was so nice, it was so sweet, they were together, and then he cut them in half with the Nesira. Because there was one thing that was missing. The one thing that was missing was the possibility to truly love someone. To truly see somebody, ponim el ponim, face to face, and understand. You see, there is some sweetness in looking for the other. Because the Sforim tell us that when Hashem cut Adam and Chava in half, there remains a vague recollection of who that person was, of who that person is. There's a roishim, there's a residue of that relationship that continues, that's there. Therefore, the Baruch Shalom puts each and every one of us through the pain of being cut in half. That each one of us feels there's something deep inside of me that's missing, that's lost. And each one knows intuitively that the only way that I'm going to find that redemption, that geula, is if I'm able to find that second half. And therefore, it's only through the pain of being cut in half that somehow the Baruch Shalom allows the Chosan and Kala to find each other, to see each other. and to choose each other. So apparently what the Torah is teaching us is that the Baruch Shalom wanted there to be oneness, but then there should be a feeling of being separated. And ultimately, on some level, no matter how much love there is in a relationship, on some level, there is a feeling of being separate. The pain of the nesira, of the cutting in half, continues. But we have to understand, this is the beginning, this is the Bereishis. We have to understand the nature of this separation. In order for us to come together, in order for us to bring Shalom Bayis, we have to understand the nature of the separation. What is it that separates between every chasn and kala, between every man and woman? And only when we understand what separates, what the nesira means, the sawing in half means, on the deepest level, that the Baruch Shalom wanted them to be different, so that they could begin to seek each other in a deeper way, to dig deep, only then can we understand the meaning of a chasna. Only then can we truly come to appreciate what Shalom Bayis means. So in order to understand this, we have to go back to the beginning. You know, in the story of man's creation, there are two descriptions of man's relationship, of Adam's relationship with Chava. If you look in the first parak of Bereishis, it's very unromantic. The first parak of Bereishis, the Torah says very clearly, "Vayivul Kimas Adam Betzalma," that man was created in God's image, "Betzalim Lakim Barosa," "Zocher in the cave of Barosa." Hashem created a male and female, and then Hashem commands these two apparently separate beings, Hashem commands them with the mitzvah of Puru Avu, of having children, Milu es haaretz v'kivshuha, to fill the world and to conquer the world. And all of a sudden, after that description of men, of Adam and Chava's creation, all of a sudden, from this story of the new little conquerors who are going to go out and conquer the world, suddenly the Torah turns to the story of Shabbos. Shabbos, Vayichul Hashem Shabbos is Shabbos. Okay, it's nice. Then comes Perek Beis. Look at Perek Beis and Bereishis. We don't have time to go into the text now, but take a look in Mitzvah Shem later, tomorrow. In Perek Beis, there's a whole new sugya, a whole new description of man's creation. But look how different the description is in Perek Beis. In the second Perek of Bereishis, the Torah says here, "Vayitzah Hashem Elokim es Adam Ofrim en Ha'adama," that Hashem creates man from the dust of the earth. "Vayipach ba'ap of Nishmas Chaim," and Hashem breathed into man a living soul. What's interesting here, there's no mention of Chava. All we have over here is the creation of man, but here he's not the powerful conqueror. Here he's a very vulnerable, a very helpless being that's created from the dust of the earth. And then, all of a sudden, the Torah goes into a long discussion of what Gan Eden looked like, what was happening in paradise in Gan Eden, and the mitzvah that Hashem gave, that Adam should not eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, should eat from the Eitz HaChayim. And still we're wondering, whatever happened to his kala, what happened to his wife? Where's Chava? I reminded my wife yesterday about an embarrassing thing that happened, that I remember that the day after the chasn, you know, I had to go take care of some arrangements with the Sheva Brachas, and I'm an early riser, and I went out. After davening, I began to drive towards the place where I had to make the arrangement. And in the middle of the drive, I realized that I was married. And I looked next to me, and of course my wife wasn't there. You know, that is at that early point when Mrs. Weinberger still meant to me, "I'm looking for my mother," right? So I wasn't used to Mrs. Weinberger. So I stopped at a payphone, and I called up, and I said, I'm really sorry. You know, I forgot. My wife is very kind. She doesn't remember the story. So in psychology, that's called cognitive dissonance. When you don't want to remember something, you have a way of erasing it. So the question of, where's Chava? Whatever happened to Chava? What happened to his wife? So then the Torah says suddenly, "Vayomer Hashem l'kim loy toiv hayoyis odom levadoi." It's not good for man to be alone. "Es li'ezek k'negdo," I'm going to make him a helpmate, a soulmate, an Ezer Kenegdai. And then you all know what happened. Hashem Yisburach put Adam to sleep, and the Nesira took place, and Chava emerged from within him. From within him. The Nesira, the sawing in half. So we have to understand, why do we have these two separate stories? In the first parak, gracious men, Adam and Chava come into the world together, powerful conquerors, filling the world, conquering the world. And then in parak beis, gracious, we find the vulnerable, helpless man without a wife, created not in the image of God, but from the dust of the earth. And this Adam, only in his state of helplessness, Hashem Yisburach says, "Ay, it's not good for you to be without a wife. I'm going to make for you an Ezer Kenegdo." And why the interruption of the whole story of Gan Eden? The last 2 minutes, we're going to come back to that. We have to understand, what is the meaning of that second man? Because there the relationship was forged. There in the second parak of Bereishis, there's the possibility of love. There's the possibility of dveikus, of attachment, of cleaving one to the other. So Ofram and Hadam, let's talk about man created from the dust. This is going to be a little bit painful. There are only a few men here. So I ask our Mechila, because the truth hurts. This idea, this Nakuda, this next little section of what we're going to be talking about is not my own. I heard it from a Talmud Chacham. But listen to how many things are understood in our relationship when we understand what it means, man created from the dust of the earth. Ofram and Hadam. You know, there's a term that's very popular now, psychological profile. That means if somebody ends up in the office of a capable psychologist, hopefully of a therapist, so then the person will want to know the background. In order to help the person understand his or her problems, there has to be a psychological profile. So the question we have to ask, what was the psychological profile of Adam HaRishon when he opened his eyes? Right? If someone's sitting there with a pad, and you want to understand this man, Adam HaRishon, he opens his eyes, Shalom Aleichem, Aleichem Shalom. What's the psychological profile of this man? So Kodem Kol, he certainly had no birth trauma. We can't blame anything on birth because he wasn't born in a regular way, so there's no birth trauma. An Oedipus complex, that there's something complicated with the mom and the tata, can't be. Because he didn't have a mom and a tata, he didn't have a father and a mother. So he can't blame it on his parents, it's very convenient. The children always have the parents to blame all the tzaras on. So he can't blame it on his parents, he didn't have parents. In the normal sense of the word, he didn't have parents. Sibling rivalry is another thing that we have in our psychological profile. Fights, brother, sister. The reason I do this is because my sister told me 25 years ago, my brother told me this, my sister told me there was no sibling rivalry. So, what was the one thing, because there was one thing in the very essence of his psyche, in the depths of Adam HaRishon, that was ripping him in half. And every single man, every male, every Adam, all you Chavas out there know this, and us Adams are afraid to admit it, every single Adam continues to have this fear, the fear of knowing, may offer ato, vel offer toshu. You come from nothing, my friend. And you're going to return to nothing. You come from nothing, and you're going to return to nothing. Therefore, all men in truth fear this. Understand this well. Because in order to understand a man, you have to understand this. That in truth, in the deepest way, every single man is afraid of this. No matter what I accomplish, no matter how successful I am in my job, I could be the richest, the smartest. I could have the best kids, the nicest house, the finest car, etc. In the end, I'm going to return to dust. I come from dust, I'm going to return to dust. Therefore, every man knows that if in that person's life, in his life, if you strip away from that person, if you strip away all the chitzonius, all the external all the external embellishments of life, if you take away his car, you take away his friends, you take away Khalila, a wife, children, you take away his belongings, his job, every single man knows in the very depths of who he is, he's left with absolutely nothing. And he's haunted by this in the deepest way, and we'll talk in a moment about how that affects his life. You see, with Chava, it's very different. Chava, the fear of Chava, when she was created, was a different type of fear. See, Chava was created from something. She doesn't come from nothing. Chava was created from Adam, from man. She does not come from the dust. She comes from Adam. Therefore, every woman knows in the essence of her being that she is not nothing. She knows in the very depths of her being that she is something. And therefore, in the life of a woman, there is no fear of nothingness. There's no fear of returning to dust, to nothing. With a woman, listen carefully, because this is something we're going to talk about in around 15 minutes on a deeper level. In the life of a woman, the fear is not of being nothing. It's not a fear of nothing, it's a fear of otherness, which means in the life of a woman, there is always that fear. There's always that possibility that she's going to lose herself in her Adam. She's going to lose her own personality. She's going to forget her own unique stature in the eyes of the master of the universe. She's going to be lost in her Adam, in her man. Let's understand. When we understand this kivyachol, this psychological profile of Adam and Chava, fear of nothing, fear of nothingness, and fear of otherness. When we understand this, we can now begin to understand what is it that every man craves most. I'm not talking about kishke, cholentis. Those are all secondary things. What is it that every man craves most? The answer is very simple. Again, he might not admit it. What every single male in this world craves most, a healthy male, craves most is respect. Because respect means you are something. You're something. It relieves him of the horrible fear, of the persistent fear of me'ofra atav el'ofra toshuv, that he's from the dust and will return to the dust. It relieves him of his fear of nothingness. Therefore, that need that he has, that constant need to run away from that sense of nothingness, he has to prove himself. He has to prove himself. In Eretz Yisrael, they have an expression. When there's a fellow that wants to present himself as being truly macho, he says, Ech ani gever, ani gever, I am a man. I remember when I was a little kid, we lived in Eretz Yisrael, and I had a lift from Be'er Sheva to Yerushalayim. In those days, everybody took lifts. And I had a lift from Be'er Sheva to Yerushalayim. The guy was an absolutely crazy driver. I never saw anything in my life. And at some point on the highway, he was playing with the lanes, and he got himself in trouble, and we just survived. He managed to screech out of the way, and the car turned completely over. It was mamash on my head. And he's on his head, and his wife's, everybody's lying there. It's a neilum hafuch, an upside down world. And I'm thinking, how do I get out of this place? And he turns to his wife and says, No, ech ani, ani gever, lo, ech ani. Ah, zech seya. This is nice. Ani gever. And I says, gever. I remember I got my feet out the window, and I said, goodbye, gever. I'm getting out of here. He's mishigging it. So a more sophisticated man will seek respect in a more sophisticated way. He needs his kavod. Kavod, the morale says that kavod comes from the word kaved, which means weightiness. He needs to feel, I have weight. I'm a something. Because he's running away from that nothingness, that ghost that's chasing him, that's whispering into his ear every moment of his life. My friend, me'ofra atav elof atoshuv. You come from the dirt, you're going back to the dirt, you're nothing. Therefore, he desperately needs covered respect in order to validate his existence. Because only if he's reminded how choshev he is, how important he is, and he's respected, then he's able to feel, you see, I am something. Therefore, man's greatest struggle, of course, is with his ego. It's with his ego. There's no question about it. What does woman crave? What does a woman crave most? Now, this sounds like a little bit of a chutzpah for me to talk about. What does a woman crave most? The answer is very simple. Since every chava knows, every woman knows that really, really, she is something. She is something. She doesn't come from the offer, from the dirt. Since every woman knows that she's something, she can't bear when her somethingness is ignored. Therefore, what every woman craves, every single healthy woman craves. It's perfectly healthy and normal. If she doesn't, there's something to be worried about. What every single healthy woman craves is appreciation and attention. Appreciation, and I'm not speaking about a chalila in a negative way. Appreciation, does that mean you've never thought about this or you always think about it? What every woman needs, what she craves most is appreciation and attention. Because the greatest injustice that a woman feels is being treated like nothing. I'm being treated like nothing. I'm not nothing. I am something. I don't come min ha'afar. It doesn't say that about me in the Chumash. Therefore, the injustice that the woman feels about being ignored, about being mistreated, about being unappreciated is, it's simply not true. See, man is afraid of the truth. A woman feels the injustice and the lie of not being appreciated, of not being recognized for who she really is. Therefore, a woman is devastated when she's not appreciated. A man is devastated when he's not respected. Now let's turn to the Rambam. And when we learn this Rambam so often, I'm sure you've heard this Rambam with apologies and explanations. Because when the Rambam is learned without digging deep for the Lakshan, the Rambam sounds Chalila. The Rambam sounds like it's something which is simplistic or even demeaning to a man or to a woman. But when we learn this sugi in a deeper way, then we'll appreciate what the Rambam is telling us. The Rambam is saying this is the secret. Rambam is the secret to Shalom Bayis. Listen carefully. The Rambam says at the end of the 15th parak of Hilchos Ishus, V'chein tzivu chachomim she'odem mechabed az ishto yoyisim gufo v'yahave kegufoi. Man, every husband was commanded to honor his wife and to love his wife more than himself. How does one show that love to his wife? Now, when people read this the wrong way, how could the Rambam say this? How could the Rambam do such a thing? The Rambam writes the following. Yesh lo mamon, if the man has some money, marbe b'tevosa kefi mamona, he spends money on her in accordance to what he has, kefi mamona, as much as he can afford. He should not cause her to be afraid in the house, to be angry, to be sad, and so on, to be overly strict. Now, what about the woman? The commandment for a woman is that she should respect her husband in an extreme way. And that the husband should be in her eyes, a husband should be worthy. That the husband should be in her eyes like what? Like a prince, like a king. The Rambam says, this is the way of the holy daughters and sons of the Jewish people in their marriages. And this way, alone, will their life together be a life of peace. Of Shalom Bayis. So it sounds demeaning when women hear this Rambam. That's why in most of the girls' schools they avoid it or they just quote like a little part of it. What's the Rambam talking about? This is what I'm looking for in life, a couple of trinkets. I see some of you going. I'm looking for a couple of pieces of jewelry, a gift. But the Rambam says this is Shalom Bayis. And what's this business? I should treat him like a tsar, a melech, a prince, a king. What's the Rambam talking about? But now we understand. Listen carefully. Most women, again, in the truest and deepest way, there are always exceptions. There's a perversion that's called feminism in our times that has a certain point of holiness in it. But it's covered by many, many layers of impurity. But in the true way of the Torah, we understand that really a woman is happy, although it's difficult, she is happy to take care of her home, of her husband, of her children, with all of the difficulties, with all of the unbelievable nisyonos. And the woman, in her natural, truest way, wants to find fulfillment in that place. And you could find some of these angry, bitter feminists that they're sitting in a park somewhere and they're 45 years old. And if you think for a moment that when they see the mother walking by with a stroller, that they don't have a pang of unbelievable pain of a life that wasn't spent with children, you're making a mistake. They might not admit it. Because the woman knows that only there and in that way will she find fulfillment. But all she needs is one thing. Don't ignore me. Listen. Don't ignore me. When the Rambam's speaking about gifts, you know what a gift means? A gift means I remember you. I remember you. I appreciate you. That's what a gift means. What the Rambam is saying over here, that even the smallest compliment, even the smallest compliment with a woman can go the longest way to feel appreciated, to be recognized for who she is and what she does. Even a little word, a gesture. And she'll feel the enrichment and the fulfillment of a life that's worth living. Not being ignored and being appreciated. What happens if Chas v'Chalila, listen carefully, what happens if Chas v'Shalom, a woman feels that she's completely ignored and neglected in her own home? So you know, I don't know if I can go into Arichas in this area. I'll say just in 30 seconds and then I'll run. What happens to a woman who feels that she's ignored, that she's not appreciated? Because the very essence of a woman is that I am something. How could I be treated like nothing, like dirt? Therefore, a woman will seek recognition. She'll seek appreciation elsewhere. When it's at least in the way of holiness, it might be, she'll seek it by the recognition of being very involved in community affairs. That doesn't mean that whoever's involved in community affairs is not appreciated. I'm not making a pilpul. Of course not. That's Narishkeit. But a woman, at least there, in her own house, she's not appreciated by her husband or by her children. So, and she desperately needs that appreciation. At least other people, other Yidden, other Jews will appreciate the work that I'm doing. So she'll desperately seek it elsewhere. In Kedusha, she'll try to find it in doing good things. If it's not in Kedusha, Hashem Yirachem, if it's not, there are women who think that if they throw themselves completely into a career, I'm not making a statement about careers, but a woman throws her life into a career expecting to find fulfillment in that place, not in her home. It's a perversion of who she is, but she must be appreciated. And the lowest level, what happens? If a woman's not appreciated, sometimes you have Hashem Yirachem. Sometimes you have a woman that she'll try to seek appreciation from another man. It could happen in a subtle way. It could be by a kiddush. It could be by a chasna. It could be with a little statement, with a little look. Or it could be chalil in a way that's not so subtle. Hashem Yirachem. Or you have a woman, and I've been talking to people for over 20 years. I've been counseling people, couples, families, students of mine from the Kehila. You know what a woman will always say? Always. How could, when we'll discuss, how could this have happened to you, such a special person, how could you have allowed yourself to fall into such a place and to go off into that world of impurity with another person? How could this have happened? So the woman will always say to him, but Rebbe, he said I'm pretty. But Rebbe, I'm not joking. It's not something to laugh about. It's very sad. But Rebbe, he appreciates me. He notices how I dress. He pays me compliments. Then you have women that they can't, that they wouldn't, God forbid, do that. Chas v'chalila. Of course, the vast majority of Bnei Yisrael would never do such a thing. So you have women who know what they do. They lose themselves in malls and shopping centers. They lose themselves and immerse themselves into a shallow, superficial underworld that consists of instructions given by fearless interior decorators who send women scurrying from one end of the world to another, trying to be able to have the nicest bathroom in the neighborhood, the largest kitchen. My child's shirt is always tucked in. My kid's nose never runs. I dress my children up even on a Tuesday. They look like they're going to the chasana. And that woman has to dress a certain way and carry herself a certain way. And all of her endeavors in the physical world are so grossly exaggerated. Because this is a way of being appreciated. Did everybody see my new bathroom? Did you see my new house? Did you see my children? Oy, what children I have. What children I have. You could ignore the very essence of who your child is as long as the child will somehow please the eye for someone else to say, what a child. Hashem Yirachem. These are extreme examples. But we have to understand, where does it come from? Rabbi Yisrael, how could it be that a Bas Yisrael HaKadosh of HaTahoira should be so shallow? How could it be such silliness? How could it be to spend a life worrying about such nonsense? Of course we should have nice homes, comfortable homes. Jews come from the Kisei HaKovah, we deserve nice things. I'm not an anti-Gashmiist crusader. I come from Hungarian stock myself, and I'm very comfortable with that. I have no problems with it. I have good taste. My wife is the one who watches the money, not me. But when a person becomes obsessed, preoccupied, it becomes an obsession. It takes over a person's life. To look the best, to have the best. Because that person is lost, feeling ignored and not appreciated. And therefore, she must desperately seek it elsewhere. With a man, that's not the case at all. If a man is not respected, he's devastated. Therefore, for the men that are, God forbid, going away, from the men that are tampering with the other side, and I say, how could you, Yankel Moshe, whatever, Aaron, how could you have fallen into this mess? So then it will always be, not Rebbe, I was complimented, it will always be, Rebbe, she respects me. This new person that I've met shows me respect. She talks to me in a certain way. She looks up to me in a certain way. I never had that in my house. Therefore, you know how a man will prove himself? A man by nature is an aggressive being. He's a predator. A man is a hunter. He's hunting when it comes to work. He's hunting. You have guys that in the world of impurity, in the secular world, they're hunting women. It's like they walk out to the streets with nets, with guns. They're hunting. It's like season, open season. Every woman is in danger of this guy. They're monish hunters. Man by nature is aggressive because since he feels that lingering sense of nothingness, the only way he could run from it is by acquiring, by conquering. He's the conqueror. I closed the deal. If you would hear how guys talk, you don't hear that in shul. The guys, how they talk. I closed the deal. That's a chush of a zach. I closed a deal. I closed this. I closed that. I opened. I closed. All of this means... all of this means I'm choshev, I'm important. It's not true. Who said me offer out to v'lofa toshev? Look what I have. Look what I've accomplished. Look at the career I've built. Look at my clientele. Look at the list I have of clients. The woman, on the other hand... she's bechlal, not a conqueror. It's not in the parish at all. A woman is not interested in conquering. She's not interested in controlling. What a woman wants, listen carefully. What a woman wants is one thing. She is determined to retain what is hers. Meaning, since she knows that she's something, whatever is attached to her is hers, she will do everything in the world to protect, to defend, to nurture, to preserve, to guard what is hers. Because I am something. This is mine. You can't take it from me. And I remember how many times I remember growing up, my mother was the sweetest, soft-spoken, most soft-spoken person in the world. But if somebody started up with the children, my mother would go to Rosh Hashiva, and to the shock of the whole class, my mother would just give, a mishabeir, right in the open. Keep messing around with Moshe. Moshe. Happy to do that. That's my Moshe. And if somebody in any way is disrespectful to her husband, to my father, why? Because that's her domain. She's not seeking new territory. She's not trying to conquer. She doesn't want to get somebody else's. She wants to take care of her own. She delights in her own. It's part of her. She is something she cherishes. She loves what is hers, and she'll protect it ferociously. Now we can go back and understand on a very deep level. Now we can understand what happened in Gan Eden, what happened in the paradise. If you think about it, and this was written by an Adam Gadol Ma'od, and now the whole thing will come together. If you think about it, it's an amazing thing. Chava in Gan Eden, in paradise, never sought power or control. Because, you know, if she really wanted to control Adam, she never would have given him from the tree of knowledge. She never would have given him to eat. Since the tree meant power and control, it meant dominion, it meant to dominate, the craziest thing in the world, if she wanted to control her Adam, if she would have eaten from the tree and not given Adam to eat, she would have been the master of her own fate. But she would never do that, because she does not want to control. She does not want to manipulate. She does not want to conquer. The Torah says, which means, she was attracted by the beauty of the tree. She was attracted by the aesthetics of the tree, that it's pleasing, it's sweet, it's beautiful. And the one thing she wanted to do was to share this with her loved one. And that's what she did. She wanted it because of its pleasantness, because of its beauty. Because a woman, you have to understand, why is it that a woman delights in taking care of herself? Why is it so important for her to look good and to take care of herself? Because since she knows in the very essence of her being that she is something, therefore what she seeks desperately is herself. But if it's done in a superficial way, she becomes an egomaniac. But when it's done in a healthy way, she is seeking self-knowledge. Do you know how many books are being written nowadays? Secular books, there are thousands on self-help, on growth. All the New Age literature on how to become a better person. I read a newspaper article that says the statistics show that women buy 20 times more such books than men. Because a woman is digging deep to find herself. Because she knows that when she comes to the bottom, there is something. And she wants to know herself. And she wants to be good. She wants to grow. She wants to be beautiful. She wants to delight in who she is. Men are not buying those books because you know why? Because the man knows that if he digs deep, then he comes to the pasuk that says, "Mi'ofra atav lo'ofra tashuv." He's afraid that he's going to find the truth at the bottom of the pasuk. He's going to find the truth, which is that you have an ego, but beneath the ego, there's nothing. But herein, and now we're going to come towards the end. I'm sorry, it's late. It started late. I'm going to finish quickly. This is the most sensitive nekuda of all. Now that we've understood a little bit of what separates, of how different they are, of what the nesira means, of what the tearing in half means, let's understand the danger that every woman is in. And this is why I said I was going to come back to this. Remember at the beginning I said that the danger in the life of a woman is not that she's afraid of nothing, that she's afraid of otherness, right? She might lose herself in her man, in her other. What do I mean by that? If a woman does not maintain her own dignity, and again, I'm counseling people for over 20 years. If a woman does not maintain her own dignity, if she doesn't have her own separate identity, you see, Hashem cut them in half that she should be a somebody, and she should know that, and he should be somebody and know that as well. But if a woman does not maintain her own identity, her own dignity, then she dissolves into him, because this is the weakness of Chava. She comes from Adam. Therefore, in a healthy marriage, in a real marriage, a wife will love and will cherish, will nurture and adore a worthy husband. A husband, she's mechabedes, her husband. She loves her husband. That's not called dissolving. That's not dissolving. That's how our grandmothers and great-grandmothers, that's how they live. That's not dissolving into your man. That's nurturing what belongs to you. That's taking care of what you love as part of your world to bring him up. Because you know, every intelligent woman knows that man is running away from that ghost of nothingness. But she can't humble him. If you're the kind of wife that says, "You, I just heard an initiate tonight. This guy Weinberger from the Five Towns came and told us you're nothing. Oh, think you make yourself into something. I found out the truth, you're nothing. And it says Befeirish and Chumash, me offer out of offer Toshuv, and all these years you're telling me I'm nothing. Turns out, v'nahapaychu. So if that's the lesson you're going to learn, Chalila, you're making a big mistake. It's not, God forbid, the job of any Jewish woman to humble her man. V'nahapaychu. The Rambam taught us that she has to see the good in her man. She has to love him and nurture him because that belongs to her. She has to raise him up. She has to see his good nekudas, because no matter how difficult the person is, he has precious nekudas. Every one of your husbands and future husbands has so many good nekudas. We're not looking. We're more blind than the chasm in the Vilna Gaon story to see the goodness in that person. It's not our job, meaning it's not the job of the wife to diminish the man. It's not the job of the wife to eradicate his ego. That's the job of his Rebbe. And I mean it. That's the job of the Rav, of the Tzaddik. And when the Chassan and Kala choose, and they should choose, a proper Rav that they will go to, and that Rav will speak to him, and say to him, Reb Yankel, Reb Moshe, whatever it is you're running away from, you have to be humble. Because when someone's humble, he's a mensch. And this brings us mamish to the end of the most unbelievable thing. You remember at the beginning I asked, why is it that before Adam could possibly come to his chav in a real, deep, romantic way, in the second parak of Bereishis, you remember what Hashem do? It describes Gan Eden. And it says over there one thing, Vayitzav Hashem Elokim al-Adam, that Hashem commanded Adam not to eat from the tree of knowledge, the Eitz HaDaas Tov V'Ra, to only eat from Eitz HaChayim. So the question I asked in the beginning was, why did Hashem interrupt the whole story? Why was it that until Adam would be commanded by Hashem, he could not possibly form a true and deep and real relationship with his chav? The answer to that is as follows. It's only after man is created and set in the second paragraph of Bereishis, Ofram and Hadamah, and he realizes, I'm not the powerful conqueror. Many men, they conduct their relationships with their wives in a way of dominating the woman, of causing her to lose her identity, to say, you're nothing. Your parents are nobody. Your brother, your sister, you're nobody. You have nothing but me. That's the conqueror that could come from the first paragraph of Bereishis. But the second paragraph of Bereishis, we have a different type of a man. In the second paragraph of Bereishis, we have Adam, who's created from the dirt, who's so helpless, who's so vulnerable, who feels that I have nothing except the master of the world who's going to take care of me. And in that state of loneliness, what happens? Listen, the Baruch Shalom tells him, come here, Adam, I want to tell you something. I'm giving you a mitzvah. You cannot eat from the tree of knowledge. It's only man who is commanded. It's only man who submits to the Baruch Shalom. It's only man who admits it's not me, it's him. There was a non-Jewish philosopher who once said, there's no such thing as an atheist. Everybody believes in God. It's just that it happens to be me. I am God. Everyone believes in God. It's just it's me. But in the second paragraph of Bereishis, the Rebbe Shlom tells Adam, Rebbe Adam, you are Ofram and Hadamah, and therefore I'm going to command you, I'm going to tell you how to live. When man accepts the Rebbe Shlom, that's why you have to accept the Rebbe Shlom in that marriage. Only the man who accepts with humility that he is one who is commanded by somebody above all of us, can he humbly acknowledge that he also has a wonderful wife who he has to accept as a separate person that he can love and respect as a separate being? They can begin to look for each other. So instead of having this powerful conqueror, we now have a lonely journeyer who's seeking love, who's seeking to give respect, not to dominate, not to conquer. And then Hashem, after teaching Adam the lesson of humility, that you have nothing other than the master of the world, then Hashem puts our lonely little chasm to sleep and creates Chava from within him. In that state of vulnerability and loneliness, he finds a wife. And the two of them can begin to look for each other, understanding in the deepest way. I saw in a book a very interesting thing. The mystery of true love is that two become one, yet that one remains two. Two become one, but the one remains two. They don't swallow each other up. They don't dominate and destroy. Ultimately, it's only after that Adam can give a name to his wife. Before that, he could not name his wife. He was able to name every other creature in the Gan, not his wife. Only now he's able to say, you are Chava, the mother of all life, the Eim Kol Chai. And he could not possibly do that before. Because as long as man is lost in his ego, as long as he hasn't come to the truth, he cannot truly, truly understand who his wife is. I want to end with a story. Listen to this story. It's a Purim story. Some of you, I'm sure, heard of the Holy Vision, the Heilige Vision, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Rebbe from Rizhin. It happened once on Purim, there was some sort of a horrible decree that was hanging over the Jewish people. And the Rizhiner felt that in a very deep way. Therefore, the Rizhiner, instead of celebrating Purim, he sat by the table. Thousands of Jews risked their lives to come visit him from all different places. And the Rizhiner sat with his head down like it was Tisha B'Av. And the Chassidim didn't know what to do. Everybody came there looking for some simcha, and they found only despair. So, you know, by certain tzaddikim, they used to have these badchanim, these clowns that were there for the purpose of cheering up the tzaddik. So there was a certain great clown there in Rizhin by the name of Rabbi Yitzchak. And his job, everybody looked at him and says, do something, we're in trouble, it's Purim, the Rebbe looks like Tisha B'Av, who knows what's going on? There's some terrible decree. So listen what happened. Rabbi Yitzchak began to tell funny jokes and rhymes, and the Rebbe sat with his head on the table. Didn't work. And everybody looked terrified, they didn't know what was going to be. Suddenly this Rabbi Yitzchak did the most daring, the craziest thing in the world. He jumped right on the table, banging down the table with his feet in front of the Rebbe's face. And all the chassidim went, and the Rebbe himself, for the first time that night, that day, the Rebbe looked up and he says, what are you, crazy? What are you doing? He looked up, and the Rebbe's like standing on the table. And the Rebbe says, what are you doing? Are you out of your mind? So Yitzchak says, I'm not out of my mind. I want to tell the Rebbe something. The Rebbe says, oy, oy, oy. I want to tell the Rebbe something. You know, Rebbe, we came here looking for simcha. We came here looking for life. And what did we get? A depressed Rebbe, a tzaddik with his head on the table. It's not poor Miss Tisha B'Av. And the Rebbe can't believe he's talking this way. And the Jews are just ending like this. And then Yitzchak says, you know something? They used to be in the world at tzaddik, Reb Naftali from Rapshitz. And I was by Reb Naftali. And you know, those who were chassidim Reb Naftali Rapshitz, it was good for them in this world, and it was good for them in the world to come. Because when they would come to Reb Naftali Rapshitz in this world, he would kiss them, he would hug them, he would dance with them, he would tell them Torah, he would be mechazik them. And then when that person's time would come, they were 120, they'd come to the world of truth, and they'd say, who are you, Reb Yid? And he would say, I'm a chosid. I was a chosid, Reb Naftali Rapshitz. Ooh, Reb Naftali Rapshitz was your Rebbe. Come on, come into Gan Eden. You're a chosid, Reb Naftali, come into Gan Eden. But by you, Rebbe, Reb Yitzchak says to the Rizhiner, looking down at him, and the Rebbe's looking up in shock, by you, Rebbe, it's not good, not in this world, it's not good in Olam Haba. In this world, people come to you, maybe to stand next to you, maybe you'll even look at them, it would be a good day. But to dance, to give a little bit of a hug, forget it. Not even on Purim. So in this world, there's no pleasure being a chassid of yours. And in the world to come, so what's going to be? We're going to come after 120, they're going to say, who are you? You're going to say, I'm a chassid of the Rizhiner. So say, yeah, well, you had a shaykhist of the Rizhiner. He had something to do with you? Not really. Well, I'm sorry. So Rebbe, not in this world and not in the next world. So the Rizhiner began to shake and he turned red and he says, I never asked you to be my chassid, I don't need you. And he began to scream at everybody in the Bis Medrash. He says, get out of here, I never invited you, I don't need any of you chassidim. Who told you to come here? If it's so terrible with me, and he begins to yell at Yitzchak, if you hate me so much, if it's so bad in Rizhin, then why do you hound me, why do you pester me, why do you follow me everywhere? And then Rabbi Yitzchak sat on the floor, and he began to cry. And he was crying uncontrollably, and he says, Afal Pichen, Rabbi. I love you, I can never leave you. I can't explain, I just love you too much. I'll never ever go away. It's still worth it being with you. So the Rizhiner looked at him, and the Rizhiner thought deeply, he put his head down, and then he looked up, he says, Biyadin l'chaim, l'chaim, the gezeirah, the decree was broken. Because we're all wondering, Rabbi Yishalom, we're living with you so many years. Do we have a shaykhus to you in this world? So who knows what's in this world, what's going to be in the next world? We're looking for chizuk, we're looking for something, are we finding it? So we say, maybe, God forbid, you begin to think it's not so good to be a Jew. But the answer is, like Rabbi Yitzchak, we know that it's still the best thing in the world because it's true, it's real. Chashuv, ladies, in your relationships that you have with your husbands, and Amir Hashem, B'nai Yisrael, in your future relationships, Hashem brought you together. I'm not speaking, God forbid, about an abusive marriage, Chalil, that's something different. Otherwise, the ups and downs of a marriage, Hashem Yisbarach brought you under the chuppah. It's bashert. He wants you to be together. You can't live without each other. You know that that's true. You can't live. It's better being with each other. Try to make it good in this world, too. Try to talk in a way that's real and be real and deep and understand each other and look at each other the way the Chassan and Kala of the Vilna Gaon did under them. And then certainly the Rabbi Yishlom will remember his Kala who sold Nali for me after all these years. And the schus of our efforts to bring Shalom Bayis into our homes, may Hashem Yisbarach bring Shalom Bayis into his house. And we'll be zeichet to see from the base of the Kara of the sea, the building of our house with the Baruch Shalom, the Vias Mashiach Tzekeinah, the Gula Hashleim of Amitis, Mehem Yameinu Amein V'Amein.